This is the Senate Committee on Legislative Operations and Reform, Wednesday, April 11th, 2007, 7:15 a.m., room 343. The chair is Senator Rod Monroe.
Good morning. We'll open the Committee on Legislative Operations and Reform. I'm going to start off today with a public hearing on Senate Bill 474 and 1039, and we have sponsors of that legislation, Senator Schrader and Senator Morse, with us, and they have a presentation for us. So, gentlemen, you're on.
Chair, I'll be Senator Morse's supporting cast here and cheerleader.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, President Courtney, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. What we have with respect to Senate Bill 474 and Senate Bill 1039 is a PowerPoint that will put this into perspective where we are wanting to take this discussion with respect to our state and building a solid financial foundation for Oregon. Maybe pull the cap off of that. The essential question is, what would it take to create a world-class state government? And that's a lofty goal. And there are a number of things that we believe that are components of that. And something that I believe the public very clearly has spoken to us, listening to these Ways and Means hearings. Last night we had over 400 people, very similar to the first two, in looking at how we're treating our state budget and critical services. We've been on an incredible roller coaster ride in Oregon, particularly in the last decade. We've seen boom times, and in those boom times we see overspending. We are now experiencing the accumulative effect of the weight of initiatives in terms of how we allocate. Those initiatives have created directed spending, and what has been the result has been disinvestment in other critical services. We've experienced catastrophic recessions, and those recessions have led to severe and painful cuts in essential services. Our conclusion is that, quite literally, Oregon's fiscal affairs are broken. So what do we do about it? If you look at Oregon and how it had performed through that painful recession, you'll see that we were the second largest in terms of reduction in revenue of all the states, save only Alaska. Alaska is a state that's dependent upon natural resources. It's commodity-driven revenue, and you would expect high volatility. You should not expect the same volatility of a state like Oregon that has a fairly balanced economy. But in that context, we saw $2.4 billion in fiscal year 2002, and you all remember painfully the process of going through trying to manage those reductions. Initiatives have had a very, very powerful impact on our budget and where we find ourselves today. And if you look since 1990, and that essentially is post-Measure 5, and you look at the cumulative impacts of Measure 5, Measure 47, 50, 11, 99, and 66, those are the ones that we have factored in and tried to determine what impact have they actually had. Well, nearly 50% of the growth in our general fund expenditures has been determined directly by voters, not by the legislature. In that amount, you're looking at about $7 billion growth in discretionary funds, and of that, $3.4 billion is directly attributed to what voters have asked us to do through the initiative process. To achieve a world-class state, government must have, obviously, leaders who work together. I think we're doing that. We have to have accountability in government that consistently meets performance goals. The public expects that. And what we're here to talk about specifically in these bills is legislative reforms to our budgeting process, taxation, and operations that bring balance, fairness, and opportunity. And when you look at this this opportunity, it really is one that I believe focuses on our most fundamental responsibility as legislators. Whether this be a for-profit, a not-for-profit, whatever the enterprise, anyone in a role of governance on the board of directors, so to speak, that's what we really are. Our fundamental responsibility is how do you build a solid financial foundation for whatever the enterprise is, whatever that goal may be, how do you support that so that you have adequacy and you have sustainability? And that's an issue that I believe is incumbent upon us as legislators to tackle. Well, we have worked together. We have successfully created a rainy day fund. We have nearly $1 billion anticipated to go into that fund. But I would suggest that that is a beginning, because if you look at the think tanks and the analysis of the kind of system that we have for revenue, what you wind up with is a need for probably 15% of discretionary funds. That pushes it up over $2 billion to really manage effectively for downturns. So we have a savings account. But what we need is a change in the way we do business. And while these bills do not address tax reform, just very quickly want to go through this because it's a part of this comprehensive perspective of how to build this financial foundation. We believe that reducing taxes is a good thing. Creating new jobs is a good thing. Increasing economic development, stabilizing Oregon's volatile revenue system, establishing discipline and openness in our spending and budget process, and that's Senate Bill 474, saving for a rainy day by the creation of a rainy day fund, and putting $1 billion new money on the table for critical investments in public education, public safety, senior programs, and health care. This is a very, very important component when we look at the disinvestment that has occurred in our critical services as a result of the initiative process. Hopeful reform, very simply, it's how we spend, and that's in 1039, addresses that in continuous improvement. How we budget, Senate Bill 474. How we collect, House Bill 2530, that's basic tax reform. Tax is not a bad word. Reform is not a bad word. We need to tackle that and have those discussions. And how we save. Continuous improvement, Senate Bill 1039, what that does, it creates a committee on performance excellence. It engages the legislative body and the executive branch for the purpose of creating world-class state government. Reduce costs, improve quality, change the bureaucratic culture, and certainly to track expenditures and measure performance, something that we are, we're started down that path in our budgeting process, and we have yet a lot of ground to cover. Budget reform, I'll turn this to my colleague. I know when I get out of my element, when the co-chair of Ways and Means is seated next to me. So,
well, Senator. Appreciate that, Senator. We're trying to do some of this now. So those of you that are engaged in Ways and Means, and frankly some of you that are not.
Kurt, can you give us your name for the record?
Excuse me, yes, sir. Kurt Schrader, State Senator, District 20. Apologize, Mr. Chair.
And I didn't do that either, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Frank Moore, State Senator, District 8.
Thank you.
We're passionate about this process, so it's much more interesting than we are, sir. And some of you, frankly, the entire legislature should recognize this. This is the rubric under which we're trying to budget this coming session to show the naysayers that State of Oregon can and will be doing performance-based budgeting. We're actually trying to open this up. It's been, a pretty bipartisan process. We've got lots of information out to everybody to help make decisions. We've set a spending target as the co-chairs, and we're adhering to it. The co-chair's budget is still based on the original $15 billion that we walked in the door with and said that was going to be our target. We've allocated money to each of the program areas, so the education folks know how much money they theoretically have to spend. Same thing for the human service, public safety, natural resource, economic development, and general government folks. Service, public safety, natural resource, economic development, and general government folks. And we set aside reserves, as Senator Morris alluded to. We have probably one of the largest ending balances in my history here in the legislature. When you add in the rainy day monies and some of the educational stability fund monies, we'll have the largest amount of reserves set aside for the state of Oregon we've had in a long, long time. So I'm feeling pretty good that if we can continue down the bipartisan budget process, we'll build these budgets. But there are problems, and I think it points to when you're dealing with the size of the pie, as some of my good friends in the legislature talk about it, there's only so much money to go around. We go around the state on these budget hearings. It becomes all the more apparent that there's lots of great causes. We can only do so much. The idea that we're limited because we have to be sustainable in our budgeting process and in our spending process, given the revenues and the volatility of the revenues we have, begs the question about what should we be doing about reforming our revenue stream.
The tax reform component, again, will move very quickly, but tax reform needs to be focused on objectives. Incremental taxes around the margins do not accomplish things for our economy, and tax reform should really focus on goals to strengthen the economy, create jobs, have a net reduction in taxes, increase and stabilize revenue, and focus on that unreported taxable income, which unfortunately we have a burgeoning illegal drug economy. All that cash gets converted to consumption, looking at the business picking up a greater share, and tourists certainly are not making their contribution to our state. Very quickly, just to put it in context, a major reduction in personal income tax, capital gains tax, to the tune of about 40% tax cut. Offset that with the regressive nature of a sales tax with property tax and rent relief to the tune of $1 billion, sales tax of 5%, and a net revenue increase of $880 million. This is based on an OTIM, Oregon Tax Institute model, projection just of last week. This number moves around as changes in the economy occur, but it's in that range of $800 to $1 billion of additional revenue that can happen. What happens with this, when you broaden the base, is you have a net reduction in taxation for every tax bracket in the state of Oregon by broadening that base. We believe that's a good thing. Exemptions, you have the normal kind of exemptions in this in 2530, House Bill 2530, shelter, public transportation, health care, education, and so on and so forth. Tax reform, as I stated earlier, it really should make our economy more competitive. And this model, according to our legislative revenue, when it's seasoned, we would have a net increase in jobs and private investment would increase. Creating jobs is the result. Stabilizing revenue through diversification of a more stable consumption tax, and most importantly, spread that tax burden more fairly and equitably across all sectors of our economy. What are you buying? We believe that if you look at the four components in this hopeful reform, that we'd be able to fund programs that have been on the chopping block. We'd be able to fund K-12. K-12 on an inflation-adjusted basis, per student basis, is $428 million below water level. Higher education is $169 million, just in this biennium, just to get back to where we should be. Tremendous disinvestments. So we're looking at some very, very positive improvements for our state. Restore fairness and thoughtful spending priorities. Our suggestion in this comprehensive reform is that we enact it and we take it for a test drive. And I would share with you that we have been in the process of testing this qualitatively with focus groups, and we're now, next week, we'll be going out quantitatively statewide to see if, in fact, voters would believe that these essential components are worthy of our effort to actually implement, put it into action, and let the voters test it. Now, that's bold, and it's creative, and it's thoughtful, I believe, but it's necessary that we look at it. The systemic problems that we have in our state will not solve themselves. It's up to us to do that. Part of this plan that we have on the agenda today, the two components, Senate Bill 474 and 1039, will move us further in that direction. So, Mr. Chair and colleagues, concludes the presentation.
And the tax reform components, of course, are not in the bills before us.
No, they're not in this bill.
They sound remarkably like a bill I worked on in 1985 and failed at my next re-election as a result. That's an absolute fact. Other questions? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. I'm very interested in the whole process that you've taken on. But there's a couple of structural components that I'd like you to address. One of the things that the first bill we passed on the first day, which created a test drive, so to speak, of annual sessions, one of the great things about it was the timeline that it put on the legislature to be done by January 29th. And of what I've been seeing over my years of being here is that for the first time we were actually backdating policy bills, and things are moving on a timeline to get done. And you can call that planning or you can call that pressure. No. But, you know, you alluded to boards of directors, and that's really how boards of directors meet. You either make goals and stick to them, or you're in a social club. I mean, there's effective boards and there's not effective boards. And so one of the things that I look as you've got these four elements together is the role of the revenue forecast. The revenue forecast around this building, in my experience, has been one of the biggest reasons for us to delay. You know, the governor starts out, then you have the rally on the steps of the Capitol in February, and then everyone waits till the March forecast, then we wait till the May forecast. In your work group, have you addressed changing the forecast? There's other models out there. I mean, I think it's Washington State that the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the non-political group of economists, all three do a revenue forecast, and you vote on which one you want. I don't know if that's the right way, but is there any way to change the pressure that the revenue forecast has on the budgeting, which I believe ultimately leads to shorter sessions, builds public trust again, and you know, and actually strengthens the institution of the legislature?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson. Our bill does address that. It doesn't actually change how you do the forecast, but what it does do is set up a date certain early in the session along the lines of proposals I think you've had in the past, where there is a resolution passed by this body based on some recommendations by the co-chairs and the Ways and Means people done in the first couple months of session, roughly, that say, you know, here's how much our need is in the state. We address what we think are the really critical needs. We look at how much revenue we really think we're going to have, and the appetite for Oregonians. What is their price of government? How much money they're willing to spend in the next couple of years? We match that up, the revenue and the need, and we set a rough outline of a budget and a set of spending target right at the very beginning of session. And that target would hold through. So doesn't matter what the March forecast would be, wouldn't matter what the May forecast would be. It's not that we spend however much money we have. It's based on what we as legislators, the guardians of the people's trust, and based on our knowledge of the needs in the state of Oregon, feel we should be doing in the next few years. Should those revenue forecasts go up a little or down a little, there's some formulas in here that adjust, you know, the spending levels a little bit. But most of the money, if it goes up, goes into a rainy day fund, goes into our ending balance, because we try and get at exactly what you're talking about, which is a prudent, sustainable spending level based on needs, based on estimated revenues.
Thank you. And also, to partially respond, in revenue the other day, we heard Senator Schrader's Senate Bill 26, which I'm very intrigued by and which I think would go a long way toward balancing our revenue situation. Those of you on this committee, if you have not yet reviewed Senate Bill 26, I would urge you to do so. I think it would go a long way toward balancing and solving some of our revenue forecast problems. Senator Vaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you talk a little bit more about this term spending target, what that is procedurally, how it's used?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Vakian. The spending target is that we had an interim work group this past interim that comprised of labor and business people, as well as the legislators that you see before you and a couple of others. And we tried to come up with, well, how should we approach setting the size of the pie? What would be an appropriate way to go about it? What would be the components? And you'll notice in 474 that in the very first section, it talks about the Senate President and the Speaker coming together, recommending a resolution. It's actually a resolution, a bill that would be voted on by the legislators, but it would be based on recommendations by the co-chairs and the Ways and Means people about what should go into that. And there are several components. The governor's also supposed to be taking the same elements into account when he presents his budget in December, so it gives us a leg up on actually being able to do this in a timely manner and have a well-seasoned initial spending target. So we go through that process, use the governor's recommendations as a push point, the co-chairs and the Ways and Means people to refine that in the first few months, much like the co-chair's budget was done this session, if you will, and then the body as a whole decide whether or not this is appropriate. So it's not done behind closed doors. It's done in full light of day. Everyone has a rough size of the envelope and what the different program area allocations could potentially be. We also recognize that we're only a few months into session, and that the Ways and Means people and the legislature will be informed in that total six-month period. It may need to change some of these priorities. That's why it's a target. It's not cast 100% in stone, but it's supposed to be pretty close to what we think we're going to be doing. And that target can be adjusted under this bill, can be adjusted up and down slightly depending on new information we get. It takes into account the initiative process, takes into account all these little what we think are pretty much all the little variables that influence our decision-making process between January and June 29th.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vakian, really what it is a guidance document. And it brings together the center of gravity of the Assembly to come to agreement on those basic large components. How much revenue? What are the prudent reservations that we should be making based on risk? And what are those broad allocations based on the six Ways and Means subcommittees for discretionary funds? It's a guidance document, and it sets in motion the ability, and it's very important in our discussion, I think, that we recognize this. It sets in motion the ability to expedite the budget in a more timely manner. We're talking about going to annual sessions. The ability for this body to function, you know, with a long regular session and then going back right into session again, I think it's problematic. We're going to have to find a way to be more expeditious, and that's really what this bill does. It gives us an early guidance document, something to move forward with and get our job done so we're not here for a long, long period of time.
If you could just clarify two other pieces of that for me. Could you explain first how it differs from, for instance, the written agreement of the 2005 session, and then also how it would relate to post-sine die matters such as emergency board actions?
With regard to the 2005, be different in that it wouldn't just be the Senate President, the Speaker, majority leaders, and a couple Ways and Means folks that would come to this agreement. This agreement would be actually a bill, legislative bill, that would be passed by the Assembly. So everyone, basically, majority vote anyway, majority vote of the Assembly, both the House, Senate, would have to agree that this is indeed the spending target. So it's different in that respect. Much more transparent, if you will.
I thought of that agreement also as a cap, a hard and fast number. This sounds more fluid to me.
That is correct, as the guidance document and target.
Okay. With respect, Mr. Chair, Senator Vakian, on the emergency fund, this would be, you would require a reservation for an emergency fund within this guidance document.
Mm-hmm.
Ending fund balance plus, as you know, we have a general purpose emergency fund and we have a special purpose emergency fund. Reservations for things that we think if certain things are done, then we think we could spend money on. So that is a part of this guidance document.
Okay. Additional questions? Senator Courtney.
It is your intent to no bill that you will shut down all four Senate sessions after March 31st if this hasn't happened, this resolution. Is that right?
No. That's a slight misinterpretation, Mr. Chair, Senate President Courtney. What we're trying to do is make sure that the final action on a bill in the Assembly cannot occur until this resolution is adopted. So the floors would still be busy. The floors would still be passing legislation across from one body to the other, but final action on the bill would not be permitted until this resolution was adopted.
Well, I don't. On page 18 and 19 and 20 of page 2, the Legislative Assembly may not enact any bills in any regular session after March 31st of the year in which the session begins unless the Legislative Assembly has adopted a spending limit resolution. It refers to any bill versus budget bills. And while I see committees continuing to work, I don't know. I don't know whether you're saying, well, the bill's come out of the Senate. The Senate could hold a session on it and go, but then the House could not do it because, in effect, if that's what you're saying, if you refer to budget bills, that's one thing, and that's not what you're doing. You're talking about any bills there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, that is true. And according to our legislative council folks, enactment means having been passed by both chambers. So our goal here is to tread that fine line between slowing work down and prohibiting people from doing the people's business and yet having a bit of a hammer that you can't have final action until we address the big picture, the reason that the Constitution has us here in the first place, which is to pass the budget. So our goal is to make sure that the policy and budget committees can continue to work, continue to pass bills, tee up all that we need to do. Remember, this date is within the first 2-3 months of the legislative session. So that gives us plenty of time, given even with the busy work we're doing now, basically none of the bills, very few of the bills that we've had that have gone through both chambers would be held back. I think you can use this particular assembly as a very good example of what would and would not be happening. We're moving fine, and there would only be a few bills that would not be able to pass the floor of one of the chambers. But we'd be busy, sir.
Guess no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that wishes to be heard on Senate Bill 474 or 1039? Not seeing anybody. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 474 and 1039 and open a work session on Senate Bill 474 and 1039. These bills have subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and so the appropriate motion would be to send them out to Ways and Means, either with no recommendation or with some recommendation. Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 474 be adopted and referred to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Morse has moved Senate Bill 474 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objection? It's done. 1039.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 1039 be adopted with a due pass recommendation and referred to Ways and Means.
Okay, same motion on 1039 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 632. Marjorie.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 632 is the bill that would create a state park around the state capitol. We heard this on the 28th of March, and since then we've requested two amendments from the Legislative Council. In your packet, you have the -1 amendment and the -2 amendment. The -1 amendment deletes the transfer of responsibility of the Capitol building itself to state parks, And it also names the state park as State Capital State Park. And it also deletes the responsibility of collecting parking fees, transferring that to parks rather than keeping it at DAS. So DAS would keep that. The DAS 2 amendment does the same things as the DAS 1. However, it also expands the State Capital State Park onto the Capitol Mall up to Center Street. The DAS 2 amendment requires DAS to build lavatories on the Capitol Mall. However, state parks would maintain them after construction. DAS would maintain control of the parking underground and the access buildings to that parking structure. In your packet, you have a little map that shows in green what the DAS 1 amendment applies to in terms of geography, and the DAS 2 is in orange. We also have a summary of some research that Krista did for us, looking at other states and the parks that they have around their existing capitals or old capitals. And that's where we are.
Are there questions for Marjorie?
Good work.
Okay. Comment. Thank you very much. We have Peggy Lynch that wants to be heard on this bill. Peggy, welcome.
Mr. Chair. It's been a long time since I've sat before you.
Thank you.
My name is Peggy Lynch. I'm here this morning speaking on behalf of myself, although I do know that you have a letter from the League of Women Voters regarding this issue, and the presentation you just heard, I think, is terrifically appropriate because, in fact, that's why the League gave its letter to you, in that the co-chairs have narrowed the scope of the state parks' responsibilities to focus on the parks' maintenance deficit that still exists of at least $48 million, and to increase land acquisition, which we are way behind the KPM targets on. So in respect for and response to that, although I am passionate about Oregon, although I have to say not near as passionate as the senator from Southern Oregon. I did listen to your audio last time. I really do, and I'm willing to polish handrails, and I do believe passionately about Oregon. I am concerned that this is not an appropriate action. As a businesswoman and someone who owned business property, it seems rather it's less management friendly to have the facility or buildings in one hand, set of hands, and the grounds in another. So although I certainly hope we can find a way to keep the Capitol grounds and the Capitol itself as an icon for Oregonians, I would ask that you not pass Senate Bill 632.
Are there questions for the witness? Thanks, Peggy. Good to see you again. Okay, is there anybody else that wanted to be heard on 632? Okay, Senate Bill 632.
Yes. I didn't sign up, and I'm a little bit late. But
okay.
My name is Jim Wallace, and I've been a resident in Salem and a state employee for the last 25 years. Forgive me, I'm not that familiar with this particular bill, but I am concerned about the quality of maintenance at the state park on the grounds. As I understand the bill, the bill will transfer the management of the grounds from DAS over to Parks and Rec. And as we all know, there's quite a variety of plants in the state park, and the expertise and skill that it takes to maintain those, I think, is a little bit higher than what we have in most of our parks in the state. And as we all know, the quality of the maintenance that we've seen here in this park for the last decade or so has been very good. And I have a question, really, as to how much investigation has been done into the ability of Parks and Rec to maintain the grounds as well as they've been maintained. And a question as to whether or not there's any ability in the bill to allow Parks and Rec to maintain the same personnel working on the state, the Capitol Park.
Mr. Chair.
Senator,
fantastic question, and I think it's the intent of the bill for us to work with DAS and retain the same personnel. We've got one person. We work him to death. He's got no support, really, I mean, effectively. And this is a job that is huge. And so it's certainly no reflection of maintenance, but it's a reflection of planning and budgeting by balance sheets rather than by passion. And so you got one person who's working as hard as they can, but you don't have an investment or partnership with the state park representing all of our botany and nursery. You've got repair that hasn't been done in years and years and years. In fact, it's so bad that people don't recognize it as being in repair. So it's the intent to make it beautiful and to take the expertise that we do have and to add to it. And whether or not state parks can do it, I believe state parks certainly can do it. I mean, with state parks being in Salem, with all of the policymakers working in Salem, with this being our state park, what's our goal to bring it to a much higher standard and to make it a jewel?
To answer your concern directly, the bill on page 3, line 31, makes it very clear that the people that are the employees that are currently taking care of the grounds would be transferred to state parks, and so the same employees would be retained.
Okay, so that is the intent.
It's in the bill.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator Bakken.
You may have said it. I didn't hear. You said you work for the state. What do you do?
I work for the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. I'm here, though, just as a resident of the city.
Okay. Additional questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else that wanted to be heard on 632? Not, we'll close the public hearing on 632, open a work session on 632. What we need to do, if the committee pleases, is to amend 632 with the dash 1 and dash 2 amendments, and then, it's an either or?
Yeah.
Okay, so we want the dash 2 amendments, right?
Mr. Chair,
it dash 2 expands onto them all.
Yes, okay. Senator Atkinson.
With all deference to the Senate President, I would appreciate the Senate President's perspective on the dash ones or the dash twos. Not only is the ability to set policy here in the Capitol as a constitutional office holder with the Speaker of the House, but also as a resident.
And the difference between the dash one and the dash two is the dash two expands the new Capitol State Park onto the mall up to Center Street, whereas the dash one would just cover the grounds on either end of the Capitol building.
That's correct.
Senator Courtney?
Well, I'm going to go. The dash one is the just the grounds around the Capitol, or is it the other way around?
Yes.
No, dash
yes.
one is grounds
dash
around
one.
The Capitol.
All right. Dash two.
The presiding officers, as you know, they're in charge of the building. I don't know whether you're asking me to lead from that or not, but in terms of my perspective, listen to the testimony. I read the letter from the League, and I'm really amazed. Technically speaking, there is a hoopla tournament here in the summer. We're not here. Well, we have been here.
Unfortunately, I remember.
The building is shut down. The public does not get to use this building 24/7. If you can see, there's 500 teams that come into hoopla. 500 teams around the state, around the Northwest. I go to church over here at 4:30 Mass on Saturday. I come out, St. Joe's here, and as I come out, there's always people here using these grounds. They're not from Salem. If there ever was a small piece of state property where the public uses, this is it, on either side of the building. It's just this. It's not Salem's park. I just am amazed at this. It is a park. And I think probably, I'm going to say just the grounds. I have to admit, the hoopla uses the fountain. The fountain is unbelievable, the people using this fountain, which is across the street. It's unbelievable, the people in the summer that use this fountain. I mean, hundreds are in that fountain at one time. I'm not exaggerating this. I live here.
In addition, they spill out into that mall on Saturdays and Sundays. You will see them there. So technically speaking, we should do that. But I'm just being upfront with you. At this stage of the game, I'm going to Dash Ones because I don't think people say, well, I'm only going to go this close to the Capitol. They come and they move throughout this area. They do on weekends, at weeknights and things. So, I mean, you can make an argument, but for whatever reasons, I'm going with the Dash Ones. But I really want to establish for the record, and none of you are from Salem, but I know you've been around here on some weekends. The public's got to understand this is the public's building and grounds, and the grounds are 24/7. The building, we have really shut down this building. We've denied access to this building for a lot of the public. And I will guarantee you one day we're going to further deny access to the building because of security reasons. But I'll bet you we'll never deny access to the grounds on either side. And you brought up a good point. We can get more resources to take care of these grounds than they have now. And I understand there's a lot of activity, thank you, Senator Atkinson. They're now repairing a sidewalk. That big garbage dump is gone. But if we weren't here doing that, it never would have happened. I think if this becomes a park, we don't have to worry about that kind of advocacy. It will take place and so on. So I want the Dash Ones. I'm intrigued by the Dash Twos, but at this stage of the game, from the executive department sees that as their bailiwick because those are all agencies, you know, an executive branch. I'm not sure they like the fact that they don't have ultimate say in this building, and they're about to get an eviction letter from me and the speaker, because we're going to do the wings. If we decide to do that this session, we have to put them on notice. So they're already angry enough. So listen, I'm just going Dash One right now. So I'm just being upfront with you. Even though, as I say, the public will spill over into that part of this. You know, we do rallies. Rallies, people will move out in that direction too. So it's an imperfect world, as you know, in your great closing yesterday. This is not a perfect. These are not perfect amendments. I'm doing Dash One.
And Senator Metzger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, to comment on what the Senate President just said, I think actually the Senate President made a very good case for the Dash 2.
because, no.
I mean, that's what I thought he was going. I said, you must be looking at the wrong map. Because the hoopla and,
President.
And the fountain and the spillover, that is, you know, this is a park, as he says.
I know.
You're right. That's why. It is contiguous. It is considered one grounds, and I think to make a move like this in piecemeal is probably more difficult than just trying to recognize that this is the public's place. And I support the Dash 2. I think it's more comprehensive. I think it does reflect the fact there's a seamless utilization of Wilson Park and the fountain and all this as part of their state park. And I think that what the Dash 2 does also is reflect the fact, as the Senate President pointed out so well, about all the people around here, that this is their park, this is their state park, this is their number one park, this is the heart of the state, and everything kind of emanates out from here, and we're going to recognize it with the type of adoration, I think, that we should for the grounds that surround the buildings. And, you know, I don't care what ODOT or Labor Industries think about their buildings. They can do what they want with their buildings. But if they're centered on the state park, just like other buildings are, that's great. They'll have the ability to relish the beauty outside there as they look over those cherry trees when they were blooming last week, and recognize that this is their state park as well. So, you know, hate to confront the great one, but I would support strongly the Dash 2 and make it a comprehensive look.
There's a couple things we need to understand. First of all, whatever we do, this is going to Ways and Means next. So this, we're making a recommendation to Ways and Means.
Can I make another question, Mr.?
Certainly.
I'd like to ask another thing of the great one. We do, on occasion, send bills to Ways and Means that go to Ways and Means to the floor first in one chamber. We've done that for a number of different reasons at times. And I think this would be one particular bill that would be very good to go to the Senate floor and have it go to the Ways and Means upon referral to the House of Representatives where the Speaker could refer it there. I think it would be important because when you have a 7 a.m. hearing and it goes to Ways and Means, no one knows what's going on. And I think this allows the public to get engaged. It allows us to put a spotlight on what we're trying to do for the people of the state. have that discussion in open public forum as opposed to the closed doors of Ways and Means. It will get there anyway. Again, Mr. President, we've done this on a number of occasions to make that point, and I would request that the Senate President waive the Ways and Means referral on this chamber side and allow that to take place where it could then move to the budget writing process on the House of Representatives.
We can ask. Senator Courtney, do you want to respond?
Senator Metzger, what do you, if I did that, then you'd come see me, I know Senator Morris would come see me, and everybody here would come see me about one of their bills they wanted you to see me. You know that. I can't do that.
So you're not going to send any bills to the floor.
I
don't have a Ways and Means referral.
Senator,
I just want to make sure I heard what you just said.
Senator Metzger.
Well, I mean, I know it sounds funny, but I'm really serious about this.
I'm sure
you
are.
In the sense that we're in here in, like, say, a 7 a.m. hearing. This is going to go down to those, we talk about open processes, it's going to go down to the closed doors of Ways and Means. There's going to be no public debate on this issue and a chance to talk about it. And it's a procedural thing. You know, we've done it before. This is not unusual. We know it's going to go to Ways and Means. You know,
We're going to lose Senator Atkinson any minute. So, Senator Metzger, why don't you make your motion?
Okay. I won't make a rescission over the Senate President's desires. So, but I would move. I'd like to have him think about it, though. I would move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 632.
Senator Metzger has moved the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 632. Is there further discussion?
Yes,
Senator Avakian.
I don't know. I'm trying to think logistically how this works between the -1s or the -2s with the employee and who has jurisdiction over the employee and the grounds. Right now, I think the same people do the grounds on both sides. I'm guessing it's a DAS employee. And if we make it a parks employee but limit it to the Capitol grounds, that person is still doing both. He's working on DAS territory over there, but he's a parks employee. At the same time, if we make both of them in the -2s the jurisdiction of the parks, the buildings stay with DAS, I guess.
Yes.
But the ground,
the street,
the grass are parks. So I guess maybe unless somebody knows the answer here, I need to know who has jurisdiction over the employee and who has jurisdiction over the land and how we're mixing the two.
The employee takes care of the grounds currently would be transferred from DAS to Parks and Rec. I would assume that if they also had authority over the mall, that they would add an additional employees. The money that Parks and Rec gets from Measure 66 is more than double what it originally was because it's a percentage of the total lottery take, and the lottery has exploded in recent years. So what this would do would be to free up some general fund money that's currently being used through DAS for this maintenance, to free that money up for polishing brass or other things.
Well, let me hone my question. And my question then is it a problem if you've got a parks employee who's working on the DAS-controlled land? Or does that not matter?
Well,
if we were to do the -1s, have the two separate.
It could be a problem with -1. I could see that.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a problem or not.
I don't know if it's a problem either, but it would definitely not be a problem with -2.
I don't know.
Change lawnmowers, yeah.
Senator Morse?
Go ahead, Margie. You had something to add.
Well, I was just going to add that the -1 is also in the -2. That's why we're at an either-or stage. That the -1 merely limits the geography to this side of the street on either side of the Capitol building. -2 expands the park out onto the Capitol Mall.
Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And with all deference to the Senate President, you know, I could go either way. But what I would like to point out is this bill is really about vision. And the vision is, what do we want for this Capitol grounds? Mm-hmm. And if you look at it from an architectural perspective, particularly landscape architecture, and that's what we're talking about, landscape architecture, the mall was designed specifically for a purpose. It showcases the Capitol. That's the architectural design of this these grounds. And I'm excited about this bill. I think it could just be a tremendous asset with all the things that could be done through the parks to reflect on the historical nature of how we got here, the interpretive type things, and facilities where the hundreds of people that come, and we've seen them when we've been here, any sunshiny day that turns warm and they turn the fountains on here, there are dozens if not hundreds of children. They love to come here. So this bill is about vision. I think the Dash 2s really speak to the vision, an expanded vision rather than a limited vision.
Okay, the motion is to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Krista, would you call the roll on this one?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Botkin?
Yeah.
Senator Courtney?
Can't beat him, join him, yes.
Aye. Senator Roy?
Aye.
Senator Winter?
Senator Winter is excused. Aye. Motion carried. We need a motion to move the bill as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, are we in discussion?
Yes, discussion.
Mr. Chair, to the Senate President, the great one.
I hope no one in this building is here listening to this.
Dad. I've got multiple bills that have referrals to Ways and Means, and I will sign a blood oath that I will not ask you again for another, what do we got left, 70 days, if we can do what was not in my mind at all until Senator Metzger brought it up, motion.
If the committee so wishes, I will draft a letter to Senator Courtney asking that the subsequent referral be removed. That's about that. The best we can do, I think.
Okay.
Senator Metzger.
I was just playing off of what you just said, Mr. Chair. I think we can make the motion to send it so we don't have to have a subsequent action, because otherwise we would not have a motion to send it to the floor. We could ask to send it to the floor with a request that the Ways and Means, and he would still be up to him to do that, and then he can determine what he wants to do as he sweats with his office.
It's over. Inappropriate motion. Okay, so Senator Metzger moves that Senate Bill 632, as amended, be sent to the floor of the Senate, along with a request that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Correct.
With a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Okay. Is there any objection to the motion?
Let's do a roll call on this again. That worked last time.
Without objection, Senate Bill 632 is heading for the floor, or Ways and Means. Okay, thank you very much. Senator Atkinson, thank you for hanging around.
I
appreciate that. Is there anything further to come before the committee? Marjorie, anything else?
No.
This meeting is adjourned.
Oh, that was too